You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. We finished up Kid Dark Against the Machine last week, and the next audio serial will be a new fake geek girl story. Halloween is not a verb. But as a palate cleanser, this week I'm going to try something a bit different and read you an essay from my Pratchett's Women collection. I'm recording a bunch of audiobooks to sell from online vendors at the moment, and this is one of them, so consider this a teaser. But if you like it, I might read more essays occasionally in the future, in between the big stories. Let me know. The Boobs, the Bad and the Broomsticks is the first essay in the collection. It might be the most read piece of writing I've ever created. It's certainly in the top three. Tens of thousands of people have read this essay. I choose to believe that its popularity is not just because it has the word boobs in the title. Let me hold on to my illusions. And this essay has spoilers to greater or lesser degree for the first 10 books of Terry Pratchett's Discworld series. So from The Colour of Magic all the way through to Moving Pictures. And be warned. The Boobs, the Bad, and the Broomsticks. Terry Pratchett is one of those writers that you can see noticeably improving and honing his craft as he goes. One of the aspects of his writing that improved massively over the years was his treatment of female characters, and I always meant to stop at some point to figure out exactly how it was that his portrayal of women changed and developed over several decades. I started reading the Discworld books in the early 90s, when Small Gods, 1992, was the latest release. This meant I read all the books before that mostly in the wrong order, and all the books after that in mostly the right order. So it took me some time to figure out what was going on with Pratchett's Women, and to wrap my head around the chronology. The first 10 books of the Discworld series are problematic in their portrayal of female characters, particularly the younger women. I certainly don't think this was intentional on Pratchett's part, but an unfortunate result of the fact that in these early books he was largely parodying fantasy worlds and tropes, and only just beginning to develop the Discworld into something more substantial and complex. You can see from his novels that Pratchett was very much aware of some of the dreadful sexism in his source material, and he often wrote female characters in direct response to problems he saw in the fantasy genre. His apparent intentions to point out the silliness of the portrayal of women in fantasy sadly often backfired. In these early Discworld books, we find Pratchett mocking the semi-clad, bosomy fantasy women who traditionally reward the handsome hero with their sexy selves. He does this at first by creating semi-clad, bosomy fantasy women who A, say bitchy things to the not handsome hero in the hopes no one will notice, they're still a cliche of the genre, and or B, amusingly fail to fall in love with the protagonist, but instead reward a less obvious male character with their sexy selves. Examples of this phenomenon include Bethan in The Light Fantastic, the glamorous priestess who's cross about being rescued from a temple, and chooses to hook up with the aged Cohen the Barbarian instead of giving Rincewind a second look. Conina in Sorcery, the glamorous warrior woman, who chooses to hook up with the nerdy Nigel instead of giving Rincewind a second look. Tracy in Pyramids, who's totally hot for Tepic and vice versa until they discover they're siblings, and he promptly hands her an empire and his best friend. Princess Kelly in Mort, who goes for the dweeby wizard, finally a hot girl with a taste for wizards, as long as they're not the protagonist. Over Mort, and finally Ginger of Moving Pictures, and Isabel of Mort, who are constantly bitchy to their respective guys, but ultimately choose them. Oh, and don't forget Eleanor of Tort in Eric, a parody of Helen of Troy, the joke being that 10 years of being a wife and mother will turn the most beautiful woman in the world into someone plump, ordinary and unworthy of a teenager's sexual fantasies. I should admit at this point that when I was 14 and reading the Discworld novels for the first time, I adored Conina and Tracy and Ginger, I totally wanted to be just like them when I grew up. I look back on that now and shudder just a bit. Teenage self, how about we aspire to be something other than a Josh Kirby cartoon character? Oh, Josh Kirby. There's that, too. Even when the writing in the Discworld books challenged and questioned the roles of female characters in fantasy, the original covers reinforced the cliches so hard that the boobs of the heroines could be classified as lethal weapons in their own right. Pratchett writes a lovely paragraph in The Light Fantastic, 1986, only his second Discworld novel, in which he describes Herenna the Henna-haired Harridan, a barbarian warrior. He expands at length about how in other fantasy worlds, she would be dressed in a lurid but impractical costume. But in fact, she's wearing some quite sensible armour. Have a cold shower, chaps, the woman is appropriately attired. This elegant and witty piece of writing is completely sabotaged by the fact that the cover art, as with all Discworld covers for the first couple of decades, depicts Herenna bursting out of a tiny postage stamp bikini with enormous beach ball bosoms. This is a character who only appears for a page or two in the entire novel, and thus can only have been included on the cover in order to raise the number of scantily clad breasts to 4. Sadly, that's what I see now when I look back on my favourite Discworld heroines of my teen years. Good intentions that simply didn't go far enough. The girls got to look pretty and say the occasional witty line, but they didn't get personalities that ran deeper than their bra size. Also, it has to be said, they all had pretty much the same personality, which was difficult, plus snarky, plus beautiful. There are some exceptions. Lady Sybil in Guards Guards, 1989, is an unusual romantic interest in that she has a fully defined personality, gets lots of witty lines that aren't mean, and is an equal match for the protagonist, Commander Vines. She's also a woman of mature years, who is not lithe and pretty, and thus escapes much of the usual, I am standing here in my fur bikini being ironic about the sexist portrayal of women, depictions of early Discworld women. She was developed more substantially later on, but this was a good start. Then there are the witches. After 2 books featuring the same hapless wizard running away from trouble and occasionally colliding with astoundingly sexy women who don't want to sleep with him, Pratchett turned his attention to feminist issues with Equal Rights, 1987. This book tackled one of the most problematic ideas with which he had saddled his Discworld, that magic was segregated by gender, men becoming wizards, and women becoming witches with drastically different magical traditions. In Equal Rights, a girl is born with the magic and destiny of a wizard, and with the help of her mentor witch, Granny Weatherwax, fights the system to be allowed into the Unseen University instead of simply settling for being a witch. My teenage self hated this book. Which is bizarre because it sounds exactly like my sort of thing, but I think we've already established that there's a big difference between my teenage self's reading tastes and my own. The problem was that my teenage self was reading through the backlist of Discworld books in the wrong order, and having read the blurbs, I'd completely fallen in love with the concept of equal rights, so I saved it for last. By the time I got to it, my expectations were through the roof, and I resented that it was not the book I thought it was going to be. It was about a child, not a teenage girl or an adult woman. Yeah, the fact that it wasn't Conina / Tracy / Ginger in a wizard's hat seemed like a flaw to me at the time. And while the best thing about the book is indeed Granny Weatherwax, I'd already read her being far more awesome elsewhere. She seemed a pale shade of herself without Nanny Ogg or Magrat to grate against. I later revisited Equal Rights more than once, and I came to terms with it, though I never learned to love it. Still, it hardly matters now that it's the least interesting book that Pratchett ever wrote about witches. It's 3 in a series of over 40 books, so that's good news. He got better. Despite my lack of love for Equal Rights, I was disappointed over the years that we never returned to Esk's story. No matter how many times we visited the Unseen University, she wasn't there. We never saw how she turned out and never got to see her as an adult. Until, of course, the Tiffany Aching book, I Shall Wear Midnight, 2010, which also features cameos from Nanny Ogg and Magrat. I Shall Wear Midnight felt like a satisfying line was being drawn under the saga of the Lanka witches, and having that unexpectedly delightful resolution about Esk made me want to go back and revisit the other witches' stories from the beginning. Thanks to the wonder of unabridged audiobooks, I reintroduced myself to Weird Sisters, 1988, and immersed myself utterly in what is still, I believe, one of Pratchett's most effective standalone books. You can praise Reaper Man and Small Gods all you like. I'll take a witch's book over those two any time. Finally, Pratchett had stopped satirising fantasy and looked further afield for material to poke sticks at, and he decided Shakespeare would be his first port of call. This glorious work amalgamates the best and worst aspects of the plots of Hamlet and Macbeth, producing one of my favourite fictional double acts of all time, Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg. Also, for the first time, Pratchett created a young female character, Magrat, with the same ruthless, complicated comedic touch that he brought to Rincewind, Mort, and his other male protagonists. Magrat isn't a sexy treasure with which to reward the hero, or sometimes someone other than the hero. She's a real person, warts and all, and her voice is every bit as compelling and sympathetic as it is nasal and long-suffering. The three Lanka witches, Maiden, Mother and Crone, listen to them argue about which is which, are a masterful creation. It doesn't matter what the plot is. Any excuse to see them riff off each other, poke holes in the pomposity of the world, and then save it anyway. It's a genuine pleasure. The surprise in coming back to Weird Sisters is just how good the plot is, how cleverly the Shakespearean elements weave together into an elaborate comedy of errors. Indeed, all of the Lanka witch novel plots tend to be about stories, and how stories work in a world of magic. This meta element raises them into being far more than amusing romps with complicated sentences, which I think is a fair description of all the Discworld books before Weird Sisters. These are stories about witches who know that fairy tales exist, witches who know about the dangers of cackling too much and getting a reputation for gingerbread houses. Weird Sisters is about what happens when the legends and stories about witches are used against them as a weapon and how they fight back. It was fascinating to reread this one so soon after reading I Shall Wear Midnight, because there are huge parallels between the plots of the two books. Another reason why I thought at the time that Pratchett had deliberately written it as his last witch book, tying up the last remaining threads of the characters. But back to Weird Sisters. The female characters are absolutely in command here, on both sides of the story. The Duchess is a magnificently awful villain, one in a long line of marvellous female antagonists set against Granny Weatherwax. She completely overshadows her husband, as is appropriate considering the parallels to Lady Macbeth. I also want to mention there are some fantastic male characters in this book. Pratchett writes interesting and complex male characters who work against the traditions of masculine fantasy heroes, the most obvious early examples being Rincewind, Mort, and Vimes. One who often gets forgotten about, however, is the Fool in Weird Sisters. Everyone else in the story is taking part in a comedy, up to and including the ghost of the dead king, but the Fool is a tragedy, carrying an abusive past and a more recent emotional burden, along with his unwavering, committed loyalty to Duke Felmet, the villain of the piece. Even when he's being funny, and he is very funny, he's utterly miserable. The romance between Magrat and the Fool, with its many wrong turns and awkward silences, is one of the most egalitarian and sincere love stories I've ever come across in fantasy fiction. On the other side of the scale, Tom John is a great creation, and I like what Pratchett says about destiny and kings through his character. For all this story is mostly about Shakespeare's stories, It also nicely undercuts some of the sillier notions of fantasy fiction, notably the legend of the lost king turning out to be exactly what his kingdom needs, despite no actual training, a trope that Pratchett also plays with to great effect in the City Watch books. The relationship between Tom John and his sidekick, the playwriting dwarf Huel, is a pleasure to read. Ultimately, the best thing about this book is that triad of witches, Granny Weatherwax, Nanny Ogg, and Magrat Garlic, each vibrant characters that leave the rest in the shade. The scene in which the three of them perform a huge feat of magic, recharging broomsticks and flying around the kingdom to transport it in time, is epic and breathtaking. Though any scene with the three of them in it makes me happy, even if they're talking about cups of tea and what kind of sandwiches they like best. So after my Weird Sisters reread, I moved straight on to Witches Abroad, 1991, which has always been one of my favourites. This is the Discworld novel which most effectively deals with the role of the witch in stories and fairy tales, and is pure Ogg, Weatherwax, Magrat hilarity from beginning to end. Only when listening to Nigel Planer read the unabridged book did I realise something I'd never entirely noticed before. This is a fantasy novel in which all the important characters are women. This is a fantasy novel by a best-selling male author in which all the important characters are women. We have the trio of Granny Weatherwax, Nanny Ogg and Magrat travelling to foreign parts. We have the witches slash cooks of Genua, Lilith, Mrs. Pleasant and Mrs. Gogol. We have Emberella, the hub around which the story is constructed, but the only male characters of any note are a frog turned into a prince, who rarely speaks and is basically a MacGuffin, b a cat turned human, who has no agency, barely any voice and no personal needs beyond a bowl of fish heads, c a zombie, and d a dwarf one-note joke about Casanova, who arrives in the final act and provides some brief comic relief. Casanunda becomes a far more important character in later books, but it's blink or you'll miss him here. How rare is it to find a book that does this? How rare to find a story with so many women in it, you don't even need a romance because the women already have plenty to do. In the fantasy genre, this revelation completely did my head in, forcing me to reevaluate a novel that I'd already loved for half my life. Despite the glamour girls and snarky witches which populate the first decade of Discworld, the witch books redeem this period for me as a feminist reader. They're packed with female protagonists, who are as three-dimensional, complicated, flawed and fascinating as Pratchett's best male protagonists, and are allowed to be more important than the men in their stories. But that's not the good news. The good news is that after this, Terry Pratchett only got better at writing women, and in particular at writing young women who had a soul, as well as, or even instead of, a great rack. There was Angua, Cheery, Agnes slash Perdita, Susan Stowe-Hewlett, and Saccharissa Cripslock. There was even another book that featured all female protagonists and no witches. But I'll get to that eventually. So thanks for listening to my Pratchett's Women's special episode of Sheep Might Fly. Next week, the Fake Geek Girl students return for more banter and bad life choices in Halloween Is Not a Verb. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.